What if everything we think we know about human history is backwards? G.K. Chesterton's masterpiece, The Everlasting Man, challenges our most fundamental assumptions about humanity's journey. Rather than seeing religion as primitive superstition gradually replaced by enlightened reason, Chesterton reveals a startling alternative. Perhaps we began with profound spiritual insight that later fragmented into mythology. This isn't just intellectual contrarianism. It's a radical reframing that influenced C.S. Lewis's conversion from atheism to Christianity. Chesterton invites us to step outside our modern prejudices and see the human story with fresh eyes, as if encountering it for the first time. His perspective cuts through conventional narratives with surgical precision, revealing something eternal and unchanging at humanity's core. When we picture cavemen, we imagine grunting brutes with clubs. Yet what they left behind wasn't evidence of brutality, but beauty. Prehistoric cave walls display animals drawn with remarkable skill, difficult poses showing careful observation and creative spirit. This fact shatters our conception of primitive humans. The archaeological record reveals something revolutionary. Humans could draw, animals could not. This distinction isn't gradual but absolute. What's truly astonishing isn't just that early humans created art, but what this reveals about human nature. We stand alone as both creators and creatures, simultaneously miracle workers capable of representative art and beings wrapped in artificial coverings called clothes. We laugh as if glimpsing cosmic secrets and feel shame about our bodies. If birds suddenly built Gothic cathedrals, we'd recognize a mind with a new dimension, exactly what we see in humans. The evidence doesn't support gradual evolution of the human mind. The human mind, with its capacity for art, language, and abstract thought, appears in history fully formed, like a stranger bringing something entirely new to Earth. History begins not with primitive origins, but with established civilizations. Babylon and Egypt showcase remarkable achievements, mountain-like tombs, enormous winged bulls, and colossal portraits that contradict simplistic notions about nomadic cave dwellers. Modern thinkers mistakenly equate primitive humans with contemporary savages. Yet today's tribal peoples aren't primitive, they're modern humans shaped by millennia of adaptation and change. Egypt demonstrates that despotism doesn't necessarily stem from barbarism, but often emerges from civilization itself, from experience or exhaustion. Early Egyptians lived in cooperative riverside villages, already considerably civilized, sailing under their own animal emblems that expressed both independence and interdependence. The true wonder of primitive times has been overlooked. Prehistoric humans weren't walking statues, but people experiencing everything as new, discovering fire with childlike wonder, playing with the wheel like a boy with a radio. Writing itself began almost playfully, with visual puns and creative substitutions. Reading these novel messages must have been exhilarating. Surprisingly, ancient religion wasn't primitive, but sophisticated. Many primitive peoples maintained pure monotheism with high moral standards. Australian Aborigines preserved belief in one supreme creator who judges spiritually. This pattern appears across cultures, a psychology of something taken for granted rather than discussed. When missionaries preached about one God, polytheists often recognized their own high God, whom they considered impolite to mention directly. Evidence suggests polytheism often combined several monotheisms. Local universal gods were reduced to specialized deities with limited powers. Pan transformed from god of the world to god of the wood. Jupiter's name essentially means our father in heaven. Paganism implies not God's non-existence, but his absence, positive as an empty chair. The prophet saw God from behind. An immense presence had turned away from the world. This absence resonates in pagan literature's unfathomable sadness, in Golden Age legends and poignant moments from Socrates, Marcus Aurelius, and Virgil. The pagan world built a pantheon, admitting gods from all cultures. Though they saw this as enriching religious life, it meant losing true religion. God was sacrificed to the gods. They became too numerous for him. Human history began in a cave with primitive drawings, and its second half begins in another, a stable where Jesus Christ was born. God had become a caveman who traced living creatures upon the world's wall. The paradox that hands that made stars were too small to reach cattle heads became our faith's foundation. We've defiantly exalted as incredible what critics dismiss as improbable. This contrast between cosmic creation and local infancy echoes through countless hymns. In that fold in the hills, the universe turned inside out. Eyes once fixed on the largest things now turned to the smallest. God moved from circumference to center, infinitely small. Faith became a religion of little things. After Christ's birth, individuals gained unprecedented importance. Common shepherds found themselves conversing with heaven's princes. Crowned kings from the east represented the world's wisdom, seeking truth rather than tales. Yet alongside shepherds and philosophers came the enemy. Herod, feeling strange stirrings, ordered a massacre of innocents. Behind him loomed Moloch's ghost, awaiting tribute. The demons, too, feasted in their fashion at that first Christmas. Christianity has died many times and risen again, for it had a God who knew the way out of the grave. Despite Europe being turned upside down repeatedly, after each revolution, the same religion has again been found on top. The faith isn't merely surviving like ancient stones. In our rapidly changing Western world, Europe constantly attempted revolution, always beginning by rejecting this old stone, yet ending by making it the cornerstone. Unlike static monuments, the church has been repeatedly rebuilt in every architectural style. At least five times, with Arianism, Albigensianism, humanist skepticism, after Voltaire, and after Darwin, the faith appeared to collapse completely. In each case, the opposing force died instead. This reversal disturbed people because only living things can go against the stream. A dead dog floats with floodwaters. Only a live dog swims upstream. Most notably, in the decline beginning with Voltaire, society lost its fundamental religion while maintaining its official one. Yet the incredible happened again. The faith now attracts more young men than old, with the new generation knocking at the church door Ibsen never anticipated. What the church brought into the world was hope. Both mythology and philosophy lacked this hope, even while possessing faith or charity. Buddhism might be called a faith, and the Lord of Compassion might represent charity, though a pessimistic pity. But ancient cults never spread practical, pugnacious hope across their territories. Without the church, Europe would likely resemble unchanging Asia now. The East remained static because it never experienced this great change. Late paganism showed signs of becoming equally changeless. Not that new schools wouldn't arise, but the tone would remain as in the unchanging East. We accept Christianity because it fits the lock, because it's like life. It doesn't imprison us in dreams of destiny, but opens incredible heavens while making earth credible. We are Christians because we've passed a door and felt liberty blow over the land of the living. Perhaps the most revolutionary act isn't rejecting tradition, but embracing it, rediscovering what makes us eternal and truly human.